Welcome to the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford.
Your weekend wake-up tradition for the last 30 years.
It's Rosie on the House.
We're your toe-tapping Saturday morning wake-up call. Good morning, Arizona. One fair warning. In today's 7 a.m. broadcast, you are going to need to grab your thinking cap. As you climb out of the bed, shake off your bedhead. You better grab your thinking cap because you're going to need it today. I've been looking for this guest for about 6 years. I thought I turned over every rock I could to find someone that could talk to me about this subject. And my good friend Carolyn Sikowski finally found him. Carolyn is joining us in studio this morning. Carolyn, thank you so much for your efforts on this regard.
My pleasure.
All right. Of course, Romy's here, my son and co-host, as always. Sweet Jennifer is out, but we got Gary D., the engineer, in place. And we have special guest, Dr. Royhier Arnold Windhorst. He is ASU's own cyborg.
And he is back.
He is back. Okay, yeah. Now wait. Now listen, folks. I want y'all to get serious now, okay? Climb out of bed, pour that first cup of really strong coffee, because the topic today is the source and origin of gravity. But to get there, we have to talk about the collision of two neutron stars just a year ago, discovered by the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatories. that's why we've got Dr. Roger in this morning. What is a laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory, doctor? And thank you for coming in this morning. I appreciate the fact that you just completed a trip to Europe. You're still on Europe time zone, so that helped you this morning a little bit, didn't it?
It helps, Rosie. Thank you so much for having me here. Also, this strong coffee helped.
Yeah.
So LIGO is not Legoland, right?
Okay, right.
It is a gravitational experiment designed by the National Science Foundation and a very large number of people, including Kip Thorne from the movie Interstellar, who was the brainchild behind this, to discover the merging of black holes or neutron stars, which produce these beautiful gravitational ripples, as if you were throwing a rock in the pond and little ripples are produced in the water. Well, black holes or neutron stars can also do this with space-time. You let them collide and they produce these ripples that you can observe.
We've built these two observatories 2,000 miles apart?
Yeah.
1,800, 2,000?
Right. One in Washington State, the other one in Louisiana, and they are L-shaped, two perfectly perpendicular lasers, 3 kilometers long in each direction. And they measure through what we call interferometric techniques whether the laser signal arrives from both tunnels, which are perpendicular, at the same time after they were emitted at the same time. And if there is such a gravitational wave ripple going through the L-shaped detector, it will produce a delay that you can measure with great effort. And after very careful calibration, the 18-wheeler on the freeway nearby will cause a vibration that you need to filter out. And so will the fruit fly that landed on your lunch in the next room. And so all of this gets filtered out, and they do it simultaneously in Louisiana and in Washington State. And once they discover a ripple that's ever so slightly delayed in time because of the time delay between the two locations, 2,000 miles apart, at the right frequency, with the right profile, the right shape, they conclude, there must have been a ripple in space-time here, which can only be due to the merging of two black holes or two neutron stars.
Well, I don't want to infer that my Cajun roots are stupid, but I know I have no relatives working there. Gary D., from Lafayette. No. You're Cajun root. You got a family working there?
My brother has a PhD from LSU. It has nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with that.
Okay, I want to we're waking people up here, and we've already got them, like, scratching their head. Let's back up and reduce the conversation to something really simple. A train and a stopwatch. E equals MC squared. Okay, I can get in the study of physics in my engineering studies at ASU back in the 70s, I get E equals MC squared, and I get calculus, and I get first and second and third derivatives. I get it because somebody else thought it up and can teach it to me. What kind of a head, what kind of a cranium creates that theory?
Well, it was Einstein himself, and he started out with this concept of the train. Actually, he used hypothetical he used trains and elevators as a thought experiment to
explain it to people like me.
Basically, get to the concept that Newton struggled with several centuries before. If something travels at the speed of light, the simple laws of mechanics, the laws of Newton, don't apply so well anymore. And Einstein then postulated that the speed of light needs to be constant for nature to be logical, consistent. It's a very high speed, 186,000 miles per second, 300,000 kilometers a second. But it's a constant, it's a finite number. And it's the same number for all observers. So whether you're sitting still in that train or whether the train is moving, that distant light source will emit light that you receive in either one of the two trains at the same speed. And for this to work, when one of the trains goes at high speed, it needs to slow its clock and reduce its length. This is called time dilation and Lorentz contraction. This is one of the properties of space-time that's not obvious or logical, but if you write it down in Einstein's equations, it makes sense, and it is what preserved the speed of light to be constant in all occasions for all observers, and that was his premise. This kind of has to be true for the cosmos to make sense.
My overwhelming conviction in the study of physics, and I haven't touched a physics textbook since about 1975, but how consistent the laws of, you could predict the weak and strong point of horizontal beams just knowing the material it was made of, the thickness, the span, the size, the dimension, and it was absolutely perfectly predictable every time. And that is astounding.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
And it all goes back to what my lifetime search is: get someone who can explain to me the origin of gravity. Because without gravity, you got none of it.
Without gravity, life is a little different. You know, zero gravity, I've never been in orbit, but if you're in orbit, you have zero gravity, and life is different. We're all subject to gravity. We know that the Earth produces gravity. What is not so obvious, and Einstein was struggling with this too, but he did capture it right in his general theory of relativity. The one we just talked about with the railroad trains was the special theory of relativity that says the speed of light has to be constant and the same for all observers, irrespective of their own velocity. The general theory of relativity says that all sources of mass, such as atoms, protons, neutrons, molecules, but also energy, which is a source of mass. I promised you, Rosie, that I wouldn't use any equations.
No, dude.
Break my promise,
dude,
here.
Dude.
I'll use the only one that everybody knows. E equals mc squared. The energy is equals to the mass times the square of the speed of light. The speed of light, as we just discussed, is a very large number. You take the square, it's an even larger number. So a very tiny amount of mass corresponds to a very large energy. We know that. It's also the premise of atomic bombs and atomic energy. In that concept, Einstein basically rewrote the equations of Newton to not only have mass, but also energy, be a source of gravity. So if I took all the mass out of this room but filled it with an enormous heat, this room would still have gravity. a tiny amount, but the gravity would still be there. So take all the mass in the universe, all the light, all the energy. That's your source of gravity. And what that does is it makes the path of the light not go straight, but curve around the mass, like an airplane when it travels around the Earth.
And
travels in a curved path.
Why the National Science Foundation invested the most amount of money in any project they've ever invested by building the LIGO.
Yeah.
The LIGO laboratories, approximately, I'm guessing, but it's got to be 1,800, 2,000 miles apart.
Yeah, thereabouts.
So that you could measure the time differential between this curve, this gravitational curve moving throughout the universe to the exactness of what?
Less than the size of a proton. It's about 10 to the minus 19th of a meter.
Okay, now come on. Can...
Yeah, it's
can anyone
tiny.
In this room
yeah.
even begin to grasp that?
The only thing I'm grasping is the train part because my dad was an engineer on the Southern Pacific.
Gary's still waiting for his coffee in the sleeper back there. Wow. So they're measuring this gravitational wave to the exactness of a proton.
Yeah, smaller than that, actually. And the reason that works is because the laser is, by design, so strictly monochromatic, meaning it's only one single color, one single wavelength that gets emitted. And when that shifts, you will know. We call it a Doppler shift or a redshift. And so when that wavelength is off the mark, your instrument can tell. And so when you have this big L-shaped tunnel with the two lasers shining at a common piece where all the light with the timing information in there, because it's pulsed in some way, arrives, but it doesn't arrive at the expected time, then you know something must have happened. And if it was not the 18-wheeler next door or the fruit fly landing on your lunch, then...
It had to be the Rocky Mountains.
Well, it could be a gravitational wave. Now, how will you notice the gravitational wave has a specific pattern? Imagine you throw a rock in the pond and you see this beautiful ring-shaped pattern that eventually damps out. It is a little bit like that.
Okay.
It goes in the reverse order, but it looks like a ripple in the pond. And when you observe two ripples, one in Louisiana and one in Washington State that look almost exactly the same, but they're a few milliseconds apart. They say, this is interesting.
All right.
This could be a real one.
We're going to take a short break. When we get back, I brought a deck of cards, and we're going to see if Dr. Windhorse can play fish.